When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Yes! Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconawill, and my friend, Robbie Earle. Today, Robbie, I had all of these fun small talk things. I wanted to tell people that I played at this incredible golf course in Indiana. I wanted to ask you about how hot it is by you and by me. And then
so hot.
It seems like none of this matters anymore. No time. No time. No time anymore. Yeah, that theme is getting a little run for its money here.
Oh, dude, I love it. I love it. All the children of the 90s unite and rejoice.
Oh, my goodness.
What a week, man. What a day. What a morning.
What a week.
Kyle, okay, there's so much we have to talk about, but here's the crazy thing. So last week, you know, which we're not going to go into a ton. We were not huge fans of Ms. Marvel episode 5, and a lot of people were, which made me happy. But one thing that I kept saying is, you know, in fairness, I got up, I watched this thing by myself, kind of in a rush in the morning, and maybe that didn't do it justice, and I just need like a better watching environment. But guess what? I just did the same thing, and
it's way better.
I mean, like, it was not the environment. Because cow, what a viewing experience.
I am trying to figure that out too, because like I said, I was on a golf vacation, played 36 holes Monday, 18 Tuesday, then drove back, and my daughter got a little bit sick, so I haven't slept well. It's really early for us to do this, all of those things. And so I'm sitting here wondering, like, why am I getting so choked up? Like when Kamala's dad's talking to her, why am I borderline tearing up? Like I have chills right now. I had chills like 7 times. What?
Yeah.
How? So I was asking the same thing. Am I tired? Am I not feeling good? Am I just excited that I had a great vacation? Like what? Or is it just that it was that good? It wasn't that good. I got to figure that out today. We got a lot to process. We have a lot to process. By the way, how hot is it by you? Are you dying? I look at my phone and I'm like, this is not meant for humans to be where you are. Because I'm so hot at like 99 with a heat index of 107 here in Tennessee. But you're like 107 heat index of 112 or something. I mean,
yeah,
you can't live in
like
that.
It's been like 109 a couple days in a row here, which is just not good.
It's not good for anybody.
No.
And just because I have to get this out there, can I give another shout out to Indiana? I drove to the Pete Dye course at French Lick Resort in Indiana, and it was mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. So shout out Indiana, anyone out there. I know Drew is happy about that. But also, shout out this golf course. Holy cow. I think I'm going to share a few pictures.
You should.
It's like I've played a lot of nice places, and it's currently my number 5. I gave it an 8.9. Maybe even a 9.0. It's my fifth best course ever played. If that course was on an ocean, it'd be one of the best courses in the world. Okay, anyways, let's get to it now. Sorry. I had to say all that stuff. I had so many things I was excited about today. What the heck?
I know. Well, and before we even dive into the episode, which we need to do quickly, this is our first time recording an episode since Thor released.
Yes.
Less than a week ago, which is wild. It's crazy how, maybe it's with social media, but it feels like there have been so many news cycles about Thor since Thor came out. Like it feels like it's been so much more than a week. But yeah, it's been almost a week now. Thor is making a lot of money, predictably. And people are very divided over it, which has been interesting, but also kind of fun. Crazy times in the MCU before we even turn to today's episode, which is one of the crazier things that's happened in the MCU in a long time.
The fun part of the divisiveness of Thor is the discussion it brings up. And I think it really kind of is showing what you prioritize individually in a film, mm-hmm. especially in these Marvel films. And so I think we just need to double down on what we said ahead of time. You know, remember I gave you an inclination. I was like, there's a chance that there's going to be a portion of people that this just isn't their thing because it's so different stylistically. By the way, does that sound familiar? I feel like we said that in March as well.
Yep.
And we were right about that part of it. I think the bad side of it is it feels like Marvel Twitter is getting more toxic.
Yeah.
Like if it was a battle between us and toxicity, we're losing right now. Like the rope is going to their side in the tug of war. So I want to encourage everyone out there just to have a great week. Be kind to people online, have different opinions, but just share them in a graceful way. And let's have fun with this stuff. Some of it is so fun to overanalyze and hyper-critique, no doubt. And we have to have some credibility. But also, I feel like we need to remember what Candace said sometimes. Sometimes it's okay to just have fun and not be so toxic to everybody online. So Marvel Twitter, cool it a little bit. Anyways, back to this issue.
Yeah. No, I think that that's going to need to be a discussion here before too long. Now that we're about to enter a break here for a bit, leading up to She-Hulk. And I think that I would love for us to be able to have a conversation about not the reaction to this movie per se, but just sort of the changing perspective towards the MCU and the way some of these conversations are developing. There are a lot of interesting discussions happening right now about the way that Marvel Studios interacts with its VFX artists. And then there are conversations about, you know, whether Taika had a 2-hour mandate imposed on him and maybe what that means with the way the studio's expectations are changing. And I think that there are just...
But then also contrasting that point to the fact that Taika himself was the one that was like, every scene that's not in here sucks. That's what he said in that article.
Right. Well, I think that's why it's not a...
And then Christian Bale was like, no, they cut some stuff that doesn't suck. I don't know if you saw that, but.
Yeah.
This stuff makes me roll my eyes, to be honest. I don't really, well, it is a thing. I just don't love getting, into this or going down this path, if that makes sense. That's not where my passion lies.
So you're saying this is not going to be a future Friends from Work episode?
Well, we can discuss it for sure. It just, I don't know. I get angry. I'm getting angry now and I don't want to be angry today. So let's
again, I don't. Okay. Trigger warning, Kyle. I don't think that it's necessarily about Love and Thunder itself. I just think it's a really interesting microcosm because, you know, just objectively, over the last year, we have gotten some of the worst Rotten Tomatoes scores in the MCU ever. Period, which I don't mean to say that we've gotten the worst projects. Some of those projects that have low scores are really high up on you and I's rankings. So this is not a, is the MCU going downhill discussion, but I just think it's kind of fascinating to look at why that is, if that's deserved. And there are things we've talked about there, but there are also some things that I think we haven't. And I think they do merit discussion, and there are certain things you and I have talked about online, whether that's on the film side or the Disney Plus side. And I think that this break might be a good time to think about some of that stuff. And part of the reason I want to bring this up now is because if you're listening to this, I would love to hear your thoughts on why some of these films have gotten different critical responses than we're used to, whether that's because you think that they're actually worse or whether you think that maybe there's a change in the expectation. Because I do think that our listeners, to your point, tend to skew positive, which I love, which doesn't mean that they're blindly loyal to Marvel stuff. It just means that I think even when they dislike something, that dislike comes out in a much less toxic way, which is one of the reasons I appreciate our community so much.
For sure.
So if you're listening, we would love to get your feedback and maybe kind of take stock of some of that, maybe use it as a little bit of a mailbag episode, let y'all be part of that conversation. So write us, theffwpodcast.com, social media at theffwpodcast, or, you know, we're always in the Slack. So let us know your thoughts wherever.
And see, that's why I think taking a quick week off here is a perfect time for a break, because first of all, we put out so many episodes that I feel like it's not bad for us to give people a second to catch up on those things just to make sure everyone is on the same page before we move on. But then I kind of love that we have 4 or 5 weeks here before She-Hulk, so that when we come back the following week, we can just big picture talk Thor.
Yeah.
Then the following episode, we can big picture talk Miss Marvel, because today's going to be about like this episode and where this show went. But then
right. We
still have room for reflection for the next 4 weeks, I guess. That's the point. The next 4 weeks will be reflection. Like, what do we think of Thor? What do we think about the movies in general and where they're going? What do we think about Miss Marvel? And what do we think about the Disney Plus shows in general and where they're going? Mm-hmm. And are there lessons we can be learning from the things you just talked about? So I kind of love how this is coming out now and setting it up perfectly for us.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that everybody needs a bit of a breather on all fronts. I mean, even just, it's crazy if you look at the amount of content that's been coming out just over the past month or two beyond just Marvel. I mean, there's Obi-Wan, there's Top Gun, Jurassic World, Stranger Things, both parts of season 4. There's been a ton of pretty needle moving stuff out there.
Well, and I think that that's going to be a huge part of the larger discussion. Not just that there is so much content, but because we're moving from network television when you and I grew up, right, to everybody streaming, you're getting every individual company pouring their entire budgets into their, what, 3 shows for the year? But what's happening is you're starting to get so many of those. So it is almost like, it's good, I think, because the content gets better than a lot of the network stuff that we grew up with. But yeah, it's just going to be a lot. People are going to have to start really sifting through all of it when they make their choices on what they want to see.
Well, and it's so fascinating to see the things that rise to the top, because I didn't even mention The Boys, which I think has really dominated the TV discussion in a huge way lately. Like, I always find it fascinating, like at my office, which, you know, it is not populated by folks that I would characterize as like superhero nerds. Everybody's watching The Boys. Everybody's caught up, you know, week to week on The Boys. But then, you know, it's like Candace and I have just recently started watching the show The Bear on Hulu that I was telling you about, which I think is one of the best shows I've seen in a long time. And so it's just, you're right. There's so much going on out there. There's so little time to try to check in on all of it, whether you're talking about just like within the kind of fun sci-fi campy world or the more grounded drama. There's a ton of great content, which I think is good, but also can maybe be a little bit overwhelming.
So just a little teaser there. But Rob, before we move off the Thor thing, couple things here. One, we just got back a dope Friends from Work T-shirt design.
Oh, yes.
A really cool T-shirt design. We haven't decided if this Thor-themed T-shirt is going to be a T-shirt or a tank top. I kind of feel like it should be a tank top, suns out, guns out, for the summer, especially with the heat you're dealing with and I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
But holy cow, it looks amazing. So be on the lookout for pre-orders for a fun new Friends from Work item in the next week or two. And then secondly, we talked about this last week, but I'm loving this relationship with Organic Price Books already. And again, yes, you need to check them out. If you guys are into comics, Organic Price Books is our new partner. So if you go there, use the referral link in these show notes, or at least use our promo code, Friends From Work, to tell them that we are the ones that sent you. It helps them and it helps you and it helps us. And I've been excited about this. I mean, there's some good Thor comics. So if you want to get caught up now that you've seen Thor Love and Thunder, Robbie, maybe you should tell people which comics to get.
Yeah, I've been so encouraged by the response so far. And it's such a perfect time for us to have this partnership because, yeah, the Thor Love and Thunder film, like we've said before, is drawn as much from specific comics as almost anything else we've gotten. So if you've seen that movie and you want to read the comics, or maybe you listened to our Comics Corner episode on Friends From Work Plus, there are a couple different books that are on the Organic Price Books shop right now that you can go buy that I think are really excellent ways to read some of these stories. The first thing that I always recommend is the Jason Aaron Thor Omnibus. It's volume one of his entire like 7-year run. And you can get it on their site right now for a great deal. And it's a ton of comics. So if you go on there, know that you are going to wind up with a massive, like thick tome of some of the best Thor comics that you'll ever read. So that's there. And that gives you really everything that Love and Thunder is pulling from, for the most part, all the gore stories, the introduction of Jane Foster as Thor, and it's just excellent all the way through. You'll be really happy with that. If that is too much, if you're not a big hardcover, thick comic book person, there are other options. You can also go on there and find, Marvel does these complete collections, which are basically the same as like an omnibus, but they split it up into thinner paperbacks. So easier to read, easier to keep up with, and a little bit more affordable. They have the first volume of Jason Aaron's Thor as a complete collection. They also have some other volumes further down if you want some of the Jane Foster stuff. But that first one will give you the entire first Gore the God Butcher arc that movie pulled from.
I love it. I may need to go on there and get one for myself, Rob. Is your you boy should. Kyle going to get one? Oh, maybe.
There's a lot of great stuff. And one thing that I meant to say last time, one of the things I love about this is this does not have to replace your local comic shop. So if you're somebody that does go and get single issues, I'm that person too. I've talked a lot about that. I go to Austin Books and Comics. That's where I go get my single issue comics. So no worries. We're not asking you to betray that shop. This is a place for you to get these collections, trades, hardcovers. So again, best of all worlds, so many wins.
Peep the show notes, right? There's a referral link in these notes. And I think the promo code is Friends From Work. Correct, Robbie?
Yep.
Okay. There's a couple promo codes. They'll all be in the show notes. And when you get to that referral page, you can see some promo code option. But if you tell them Friends From Work, then they know we sent you. So win, win, win. And Robbie, they probably also have some Ms. Marvel comics there, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm so excited. Ms. Marvel episode 6. Let's go.
All right, Kyle, the final episode of Ms. Marvel season one, or Ms. Marvel the series, depending on how this plays out, is entitled No Normal. It's episode 6, the finale. It was written by Will Dunn and our friend A.C. Bradley, as well as Matthew Chauncey, both from Marvel's What If. The story is credited to Will Dunn. And this was directed by Adil and Bilal, who also directed the first episode of this show that we loved so much.
Yep.
We will talk about that some. I know. We'll talk about that some in a second. Otherwise, you know, what I kind of love, we have the same folks showing up here, same incredible music by Laura Cartman. The only real addition here is one Brie Larson as Captain Marvel there in the very end.
Okay, some rapid fire, huge picture things. I'm just going to, I have to just spew this. This is word vomit, okay? Here we go. First of all, yes, shout out Laura Cartman. I feel like she did a consistent job throughout the whole series.
Oh, so yeah. Yeah.
I love what she brought. Shout out to the show. Thank you for redeeming what I thought was an otherwise fairly average episode last week. I again think that we were right. Anytime it's family, Jersey, school dynamic, the show is excellent. And even in this episode, if they bring up something to the clandestines, I was just less involved.
Right.
So I think that confirms how I felt last week. Holy cow. I thought this was a fantastic finale.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. At the ending, this is going to be potentially one of the biggest turning points for the MCU in the next few years. If Kamala is going to be a mutant, we're going to always look back at Kamala being a mutant and Bruno being the first person to discover that. And again, we're going to talk about this in a second, more detail, but just let me quick spew a few things. I thought Brie Larson looked so badass. Part of it maybe is, I mean, this sounds so stupid, but I just like that, like that style when she came out of that thing with her hairstyle and that costume feels a little more grungy.
Sleeves?
Well, it feels like grungier, and that's what I like in Brie Larson. Like the Brie Larson that shows up in Endgame at the beginning of the movie when she's glowing and stuff, it just looks a little too like put together. It's like she's wearing like full makeup and she's glistening, and this is what I think I like design-wise. And I was shocked, Robbie, at how much that split second made me pumped about a character that I've been famously harsh on. And that gives me chills right now that, one, that character in general can be redeemed in my brain, like you always say what happened with Thor, for example. And I think that it also affirms something you've told me all the way back to the first Avengers movie, which is like the costume design does matter. Right. I used to think that was so stupid to point that out, but now go back and watch the first Avengers movie. You'll see Cap's outfit looks stupid and it makes you less invested in Cap. Then as his outfit gets badass, you care more. And I just thought that was always dumb that you'd point that out. I'm just so excited right now. And I saw Brie Larson in this outfit with this haircut and I'm like, no, it matters. There's my word vomit to start. And we can get into the episode now.
Okay, so I think that the two things we can kind of knock out here are the things at the very end of this episode, since we just talked about them.
Sure, sorry.
Since we're on the Brie Larson subject, we'll start with that, and then we can move over to mutants real quick.
And by the way, that's what I texted you when I said, what does this mean? I didn't understand how Brie Larson showed up. I wasn't actually talking about the mutant thing, which is funny because this is the one time in a long time that we watched the episode at the exact same time. We hit play at the same time. And I had just skipped the credits. So I think that's why I got ahead of you. When I got done, I jumped forward real fast to the credits.
Okay. Yeah, I think we should talk about that a bit. The first thing I was going to wonder, when we did our best credit scenes episode, which was on Friends from Work Plus, but is also available for free on the main feed as a preview right now. One of the things that I had a lot of fun figuring out is who directed each scene, because it kind of changes from project to project. Sometimes it's the director of the movie that the scene comes at the end of, and sometimes it's the director of the movie that the scene is teasing. And so, for instance, the Thor the Dark World Guardians like collector moment was directed by James Gunn. But like Ragnarok, the scene where like Thanos shows up at the end is directed by Taika. So it kind of just depends. And I wonder here whether that final scene is Nia DaCosta or if that was the Ms. Marvel director's either of the finale or someone else from the series. Because the reason I bring that up is because I really like that vibe for Carol. And that's something we've always talked about on the show since our very first Captain Marvel episode is I just really feel like Brie Larson was underserved by the directorial team on that first film. And I know that we also had some issues with Endgame, but I think one of the interesting things there is she was filming those basically concurrently. And so I think to the extent she was getting direction from her team on Captain Marvel, I think that that probably bled into the way she was performing in Endgame. And sure. So I'm not, you know, I just think that that's that's the thing I've always looked for. And I really enjoy the work I've seen of Nita Costa. And so I've been excited if this was her, or even if not, if this is just sort of the vibe that we're going for, I'm very amped about that. I'm with you. I really, really liked it.
And by the way, it's kind of funny because Captain Marvel hasn't been out for that long. That was what, 2019 off the top of my head?
Yeah,
is that right?
That's true.
But,
yeah.
But here's what's funny. It's second in the Friends from Work rewatch order. So it's actually one of our earliest episodes ever.
Oh, yeah, true.
So this conversation about Captain Marvel dates all the way back 3 years for us. We have so many different episodes that feature this discussion on Captain Marvel. And so I'm not going to get all the way back into that. But yes, I am so pumped about this direction.
And
but also on the plot level, what actually happened there?
Yeah, so
they're connected.
Early on, we talked about the Negabands and how before we got any of the like Aisha background, got into the clandestine stuff, we were wondering if that's what the bangle was supposed to be, if there was some way that was connected to what's going on with Shang-Chi. And this scene makes me think, yes, maybe to both questions, because I do think the way those powers are visualized, it looks kind of like the Negabands. We've heard the word cosmic used a lot in the show, which would really connect there, especially as we're about to get into the mutant stuff, to kind of show that there's some sort of there's power coming from multiple directions here with what the bangle is. Yeah, in terms of what actually happened, did they swap places in space? Is that what we got?
I'm hoping this is not one of those things where all of our audience knows this and I'm just missing it for some reason. I think that's maybe what happened. I think the takeaway for me is that at minimum, we're now seeing how they are connected. Like we did wonder if that Jin arm was just blue because it's a Jin arm or because it is tied to the Kree. And I just wonder if the Kree is going to play a bigger role in all this now. So the other massive reveal was that Kamala has the mutant gene. I think you can say that because he calls it a mutation. Yeah. It plays the X-Men theme. If you didn't catch that, it's the actual 1997 X-Men TV show theme.
Which is crazy. We've gotten that twice in one year in the MCU.
And if you're wondering what else, it's when Professor X shows up in Multiverse of Madness. That's the other time. But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Kree somehow influencing the mutation here?
Warning.
There's going to be a slow tie-in to the X-Men. And I think now, not WandaVision, is the time that we can start getting into this. And maybe this is an episode in the future, like a bold predictions episode. But I think clearly Carol and Kamala are tied somehow. And is it just the bangle because that is a Kree artifact? Is that why they're tied? And that is what fell onto Earth, and that's how Kamala's family got it, blah, blah, blah. Or is it that Carol's also a mutant? Or something with the Kree is influencing that mutation? Or maybe the bangle is...
Warning!
Yeah.
I feel like this is all connected, and I'm just missing the centerpiece of it all.
I'm with you in that. I mean, I think that we're going to be dealing with some sort of cosmic relic artifact. I think that something akin to the Negabands still feels most likely to me, but I'm with you in that. I mean, I think it's all going to be speculation at this point in terms of what happened there. I think one interesting thing from the comics perspective and folks that listened to our Miss Marvel Comics Corner episode and read those comics probably had the same moment here. In those comics, whenever she first transforms, her powers kind of manifest as her actually transforming into Carol Danvers. We've talked about this. In the comics, her powers are kind of like Mr. Fantastic-esque, but also there are other elements of that where like because she can change her body shape, early on, she actually changes, like she can change appearance. Like her hair becomes blonde. She becomes someone that looks like Carol Danvers.
Huh.
And this feels like, if nothing else, kind of a callback to that. I don't think that's what's happening here. Like, that's Carol coming. That's not Iman turning into Carol. But visually, you kind of get that. Like, where Iman was standing, it's now Carol, and they're both sort of suited up in the same way. And so I did like that moment. But yeah, plot-wise, that's going to be something that I'm going to have to sit with and figure out. Like, does that mean that Iman just showed up somewhere in space wherever Carol was previously? And why? And what does that have to do with the band? And maybe, I mean, does Carol have, like, what I'm thinking in this moment is that we know Kamala has the one, she has the one bangle, and the Nega bands are two, like, you know, it's two bracelets. So maybe Carol has the other one and they're like linked somehow. And so that's what we saw happening there. And if that's the case, is that some kind of tie to Shang-Chi? Is that like a, like, did she come about that in response to what they were looking at in Shang-Chi? I mean, there's got to be some connective tissue. It can't be pure coincidence that Carol shows up in that post-credit scene right. in that way, and then shows up here in this post-credit scene in this way. Like, there's something linking those.
I find this fascinating. I was just talking to Pete on the phone for like an hour yesterday as I was driving back from Indiana. And there's been a little bit of this opinion out there that one of the things that's hurting the MCU currently is a lack of connective tissue, that at this point fans are needing to know, like, what is the direction here? And I think I feel that a little bit, but at the same time, there's been fun parts of having standalone films, like Thor basically being contained is kind of fun to us at times.
Right.
So, like, I get both sides of it. I'm not taking a stance on that, but it was interesting. I brought up to Pete, like, one of the things that they did so geniusly well in the first three phases of Marvel was that they used the Infinity Stones to be that connective tissue. It was an actual object, because you could make an entire movie that was mostly standalone, a la Captain America, but then you just threw in a post-credit scene of Nick Fury, and you tie in that the Tesseract has this greater tie into these Infinity Stones, or Guardians, right? Totally standalone, but you see the Power Stone. And so that was like the way for fans to track all that. I just wonder what that will be here, you know? I do feel like we're getting close to that now. Like, is it the mutant gene that now we can start tracking? Is it these objects, like you're talking about, the Nega Bands or the Shang-Chi rings or this bangle or other things, right? Is it that? Is it that they're not as overall connected anymore, but they're more connected with just a few others, right? Like the Marvels are connected, and that's Monica, and that's Captain Marvel, and that's Miss Marvel, but that's pretty isolated to itself. Like, that's not going to run into Thor. Then there's like the Thunderbolts thing, and there's a ground level thing, you know, I don't know. So I'm just saying, I think we're at that point. We're right at the tipping point where I think some connective tissue would start being really fun. And I think that's part of the reason why I freaked out when I saw Brie Larson here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's an interesting discussion as well, because the, you know, phase one was really, I mean, at the time they weren't even Infinity Stones yet. You know, it was just the Tesseract that was kind of linking these things. And really that only shows up in Thor, Captain America, and the Avengers. Prior to that, if we're looking at the two Iron Mans and the Incredible Hulk.
I said all three phases, though, when I said that.
No, right. But I'm looking back at phase one because, like we've said, that's sort of what we're in now. So I don't think that, you know, and I don't think that if you go back and listen, that they knew that they were doing Infinity Stone stuff until a little bit into phase two. So I think that that's one thing that is, and I know you said that you don't really fall too hard on either side here, so I'm not arguing against you, but I've seen that come up a lot. And I do think the degree to which Marvel had like this really clear, straightforward narrative from the get-go, like, I think that's a little bit oversold now. I think that the difference to me is that in phase one, everybody knew that basically as soon as that Iron Man credit scene came out with Nick Fury, and as soon as that movie did really well, which was a big if, it was very clear that Marvel was going to be able to move forward with what they had originally kind of publicly said they wanted to do, which was an Avengers film. So I think people, if nothing else, knew that, okay, we're going to try to get all these characters in one movie, which at the time was ambitious enough.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you know, I think one of the big differences is, this came out the other day, I think IGN put out a graphic online, just the sheer amount of content that we have gotten in phase four is, it's as much as everything in the prior three phases combined. So I think that to ask for one overarching, one connecting thing with all these projects is maybe too much of an ask and something that I don't know that I necessarily want, because that feels like it would be forced. And also I think that they've done that so well in the Infinity Saga with what they had that I don't, you know, we've talked about this before. I don't know that I want some, I don't want like a duplicate endgame moment where everybody shows up, you know, like I want something different. And I think by doing a bunch of separate little
branches
kind of, branches within the MCU, I think that's going to be the way to do that. And I think that whether we're moving to Secret Wars or whatever, there are other kind of more creative ways to have those come together that aren't just, okay, here's a massive threat. Now we all have to band together to fight it at the very end moment. But
you're right.
But I do, you know, I do hear that concern for sure. Cause there's just something else we talked about. Like, well, what we were just saying at the top of this episode,
well,
there's so much content.
Well, and you're right that, we don't just want a repeat. We don't want Infinity Stones back. That all leads to some big team up against the villain. That's
right.
Been done. So you're right about that. As you were talking, I'm kind of smiling to myself because I feel like, as in most cases in life, the truth is somewhere in the middle, that usually the extremes are not correct on these things. So I just, again, you're allowed to have critiques of Marvel. They've done things wrong. There's critiques of things in Phase 4. We've given them on this podcast. It is funny to me that, you know, a lot of the critique during the early years of Marvel was that, you know, they don't give their directors enough leeway and everything has to be connected. And so if you're not connected, then you just don't get it. And it's not easy to watch.
It's just a cog in the machine.
It's all just another step in the story that, like, I want a standalone story. And then, and by the way, that wasn't true at the time. Like, that was an extreme opinion.
Right.
That's not true. And then it's funny how now I feel like the exact opposite is being said at times. Oh gosh, like we probably need to rein the directors in. They're doing whatever they want and nothing is connecting. I need to connect. Why doesn't this all make sense? It's just like, that's probably not true either on the other side. So it's just kind of a good look at where we are in real life.
I think that's a good word. And before we turn to the X-Men of it all here, which I do want to talk about for a second, I'm glad you brought that up, because one interesting side effect of hosting a Marvel podcast is that, and I'm sure you have similar relationships, like everybody in my life feels the need to tell me every time something comes out by Marvel that they dislike. Like, it's not that, like, and it's not always even. Like, it would be one thing if everybody was like, love this, and also hate this, but it's like specifically because I think people know me as the guy that can talk them into liking it more. So I think maybe that's where this comes from, but I get these texts that's just like, oh my gosh, like this was just terrible. Like Thor, Love and Thunder, what were they doing? And I get these all the time.
They're triggering you.
Well, it's just like it's a little exhausting. It's a little disheartening sometimes. And so there were points over the last week where I was just like, yeah, you know, it can be a little tiring to have to be the defender of this entire franchise, which, by the way, like we've said before, I don't do indiscriminately, and I never really set myself up to be that.
Right.
But all that said, like, as much as there were moments this past week where I was like, oh, geez, like, this is a lot, mornings like this, like today, I'm like,
I'm so
it's
happy
the total opposite. Like, I'm like, this is like when it works, like when it hits just right, like there's nothing else like it. Like, it's like, there's, this is what Marvel Studios does so well. Like when it's firing on all cylinders, it's just, it's something, you know, it's something else.
It's so cool to me. I have chills right now. I'm getting emotional that you would even bring that up, because that is exactly how I was feeling. You and I both loved Thor Love and Thunder, but we saw it 3 weeks ago.
Right.
But it wasn't until what, Wednesday and Thursday, that finally we started hearing from people. And it is so weird, like, that people feel the need in our lives to have to clarify when they don't like something. And I'm like, right, that's fine. You are allowed to, but like, you don't have to text me about it. and also, I get the opposite. And I think it's maybe because I'm less of a defender. I also get people that will text me that when they love something, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, then I left on this trip. And part of it too is, just being totally honest, is like, we posted our rankings on social media and it caused a whole stir, which I like,
right,
the fact that people are talking about it. That's fun. But I never knew that so many people would hate us for putting Shang-Chi where we did, which we liked Shang-Chi. But the whole nature, right, of social media is hot takey. So even just listing them is a hot take to some people. And
right,
man, some people crushed our Shang-Chi take. Wow. And I just went to this golf course and I was just feeling kind of tired about that all, if that makes sense. Like, I was like, golly, that's not what we were trying to do when we talk about those things or post those things. Like, I don't want to be the guy that gets texted every time you dislike something. Okay. And then you're so right, Robbie. Like, this morning, I'm sitting there watching it by myself, chills like 10 times. I'm choking up and I'm so excited to be here today. And I'm like, why is that? I feel so rejuvenated in one morning. Yeah. From this show, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, it's so funny, but it's kind of what we were saying last week a little bit, where we were just talking about how much we had loved those first two episodes and how that made some of the other stuff in this series harder. Like some of the misses, just because of how high it was kind of out the gate. And the stuff that I had said about those early episodes, about kind of being able to show those to anyone as just a great example of a quality Marvel project, like, that's how I feel about this finale, where, like, it was actually kind of funny. Candace has not seen all of the series yet. I think she saw the first two episodes and part of the third one, but she was around when I was watching the finale this morning. And I was like, man, what a great experience Candace has had with this show. because it's just like, if you take those first two in this final episode, I mean, yeah, I think those three are some of the best, maybe the best episodes that Disney Plus has done, at least like in isolation. And I just think if you show someone this finale, man, like, yeah, it's the total opposite of what I said last week, where I was like, I think if you showed somebody this, they would have no interest in watching any more of this series. If you show someone this, really at any point, everything about it, and we'll get into like the actual review stuff at the end, because like I said, we need to talk about the X-Men thing, but I just had to bring that up because I'm feeling so amped on everything that was, like on the heart level, the visuals level, like so many of the complaints that I think have been lodged against Marvel just in the past like 7 days, like so many of the facets of these projects that people are really throwing stones at, I think those are all the things that this finale did so well. And it's just such a great rebuttal to that. And again, this is not me saying you can't have critiques or that you have to like Thor, Love, and Thunder or anything like that.
Yes. And that was my last note on this topic, was that I've actually been so impressed with our community. If you go to our Slack, for example, I love that people are allowed to disagree there and it feels
right,
like a safe space. Some people really didn't like Thor, Love, and Thunder. Some people liked,
yeah,
this Marvel Episode 5 and we did not. And that's okay. And I love that. So it's not that I'm saying no opposite opinions are allowed. That's not what I was trying to say, or you were trying to say, I think, to be fair, when people text us. That's not what I meant. Our community, right, has handled that really well, I feel like. That's all. So here's what I'm thinking. Let's do the X-Men thing, Rob, and then we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and go through the whole nitty-gritty. X-Men thing first.
Man, okay. So the first thing with the X-Men is I want to go back to our very first episode, even some of our preview episodes, where we talked about the Inhuman connection or kind of lack thereof here with Kamala. And what I had said then, and I'm not going to give myself too much credit because I definitely did not predict this moment here, but what I had said was, I think people overemphasize the importance of the Inhuman thing because Marvel at the time only was focusing so much on Inhumans because they didn't have the rights to the X-Men and they didn't know if they ever would. And so they had the Inhumans movie coming out and they were pushing that hard in so many storylines. Like, even to the point where there was like a massive Inhuman connect in the Daredevil comics for a while, which makes no sense. They were just like, look, everywhere, Inhumans, they're really important. You love them. And everybody was like, No, we don't really. Not as much. And now Marvel does have the rights to the X-Men. And so I think it makes total sense that they're using this now as such a creative entry point. Because the other thing that I've wondered over and over again is, okay, we've now had two different, in some ways, like entry points into an X-Men universe between the first X-Men film from 2000 and X-Men First Class. And I've wondered, how did they now do this in a way that feels fresh? And I have some ideas about comics runs that they can explore and yada yada, but man, what a fresh thing here. And what a great way to elevate this character, to kind of push back against the people that didn't like her being separated from being an Inhuman, being a part of like a whole kind of people group like that. I think it was just one of the more genius calls that I've seen Marvel Studios make. And in terms of just a moment, one of the more like epic reveals in a line of dialogue since that Nick Fury scene at the end of Iron Man. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but just in terms of
That's what I said.
Oh, holy cow. This is an expanding world.
That's what I meant when I said this is going to be a big thing for the next few years when you look back. And I kind of love so much that the big thing was given to Iman, who is a massive fan. If you go read these articles already about her talking about this, which I don't know how they already have these, by the way.
Crazy.
This came out like 8 hours ago. But anyways, Iman was talking about how she immediately called Kevin and was like, oh my gosh, are you sure you want to do this? This is amazing. Like that she can be the first key cog in this new step, you know, crazy. And I love that she got that. And they had to keep it hidden from a large part of even the Ms. Marvel staff. So Bruno didn't even know that scene until like day of. Just interesting.
That's crazy.
But I guess I say that to point out that they're putting a lot of emphasis on how big of a deal this could be.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder how long this has been in the works. I know a couple months ago we talked about how Kevin Feige had sort of led the first Marvel Studios retreat, I think since Endgame era, or at least since COVID. And
I think it was, they did one at Endgame, then they took a break because Endgame had come out, but then COVID was when they would have done the next one. So I think it's been like 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, I wonder how much of that relates to this and to your earlier question, how much has been thought through and is happening on the mutant front. And this is going to be a conversation that I will imagine is going to kind of take over Marvel Twitter world for at least a few days.
Robbie, one last X-Men thing here. And I want to get on the record with this right now, now that it's like getting introduced. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I do think a huge part of the success of the X-Men in the MCU comes down to a very, very small minor thing for me. And it's just strictly the amount of mutants. That's it. If we are entering a phase where there are 30% of people are mutants, I am totally out on this. If it's 10%, I'm out on this, just being totally honest. But if it's like a rare, rare case where it causes certain people to have these powers, but I'm talking like 15 max characters, then I think it can still work, blended in with the other Avengers. But I don't want this to become what the X-Men was, which is like a full takeover of the MCU because there's hundreds or thousands and it's a different storyline in general, right? It's like an injustice type storyline of everyone who has this. Do you see what I'm saying? I think there's a difference because I've always been nervous that like, are the superheroes in the MCU, again, not the comics, but just the MCU, are they belittled if all of a sudden there's 1,000 superheroes? And the answer is obviously yes. There's no way to not.
Yeah.
No, obviously, I mean, right? Like, Tony Stark is a lot less unique when there's 1,000 people that do things.
Yeah.
But if it's like 12, then yeah, give me Wolverine. That's so cool. Give me Kamala here. Like, I'm totally on board with that, by the way. I just think the amount of it is the key thing, and I'm on the record saying that now.
So couple things. I do think Kamala being a mutant is really interesting in that regard, because she is such an Avengers-centric character, just even in the show. But you know, it's like her obsession with Captain Marvel. Like, that's a
right.
That gives us a peek into what that could look like and how she can maybe be the bridge between those worlds. But I think, I mean, if I had to put money on it, I would say that if maybe not initially, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how mutants are kind of unveiled, since in Marvel Comics, they've been around essentially as long as any other like Silver Age Spider-Man type characters.
And I know what they've done in the comics. I'm not saying that.
No, right. But I think that there will be minimum hundreds. I don't think that there's a world in which we have like the Eternals, except they're mutants. Like, I think that wouldn't make sense, because the whole X-Men mythos is about this team that's sort of fighting for humans, even though humans fear and hate mutants in general. So I think that at that point, there would be no reason to even bring mutants in.
Can you even do any of that if there's only 15? Because you're talking hundreds. I'm talking like a few handful of characters that help join the Avengers. Maybe that's
like
not
you're
possible.
Saying like there could be a ton of mutants, but only a handful of like heroes.
Well, I don't even know if I'm saying that. I'm just saying I want the story to focus on a few really rare cases. Not that this gene spread amongst a lot of people. Would I be okay if 30% of people became mutants, but they just didn't have any powers and like didn't know how to do anything about that? Maybe I haven't thought
about
that.
Well, it wouldn't be like 30. I think it would be like 2% of the world population or something like that, or less.
Okay,
like
in my mind, that's still way too much. Like, I like that you're pointing out Kamala's different. Like, I read this article that the Miss Marvel team was fighting from the beginning with this idea of, if her brother had put on the bangle, would he have powers?
Right.
Is it the bangle, basically? And the answer was no. So they wanted to find a way that, like, Miss Marvel, Kamala, was special. Not just her family. So not just her family genes, hence this, you know, last scene here.
Right.
But I like that more. Like, give me a story with Wolverine, but tell me why his genetics mutated just him. I think
I hear you. I just don't think it would make sense to have like 10 or 20 people that just mutated in super specific ways, and those are the mutants in the MCU. I think that it would, because at that point, how is that any different from any other superpowered being in the MCU?
I guess it's not, but maybe that's what I'm wanting. Like, maybe I just, that's how they got their powers, and that's okay. Just like in the same way Carol got hers from the engine explosion. Like,
yeah. No, I think, so the reason I'm more at peace with it is because I feel like the Avengers are not going anywhere.
Sure.
You know, like we've got people like that are sort of going to be on that team, I think, if nothing else, Sam. But I also feel like the Avengers, we've talked about this, have had their day in a way where, like, if we never did get another Avengers story, there's a part of me that would kind of be okay with that, because I associate the Avengers with Cap and Tony so much anyway, with Steve and Tony, I should say, that if we have, like, a whole different kind of hero be the emphasis, you know, and it's not a bunch of people coming together to fight the fights that we can't for ourselves. Like, it's a different motivations, different kind of group. It's a different sort of story. I mean, I think that there's room to explore some of these Hickman X-Men ideas of really making the mutants like a population in like a nation state and things you can explore to make it very different from an elite team of superpowered people. And there are a lot of missteps that could be taken for sure. But I also think that there are some interesting possibilities where they don't have to just go beat for beat like the Singer films or like any of the films that have followed. I think they can do interesting things that are still true to the mythology, but I think that in the same way you're going on record saying this is what you want and the minor thing that would make a difference, I just think that X-Men is too associated with prejudice and with like the injustice idea that you were talking about for them to drop that entirely. And there's no way that they can do that storyline with just a handful of superpowered people, because like what would make these mutants, you know, hated in a way that
or different
that,
enough
like Carol because, Danvers isn't.
Right. And she's like worshipped actually. So
right.
Yep. I think the biggest point you just made is mostly the runway's cleared. So
right.
You're probably right. Like I'm fine for them to do something different. Maybe I'm just scarred by how bad some of that was handled in the past in film version, again, not comics, but like, I have nothing against the characters like inherently, but maybe I'm just a little bit burned by how that was handled. Maybe they can do it perfectly here. That is like a whole nother episode. Like we could start projecting how they handle that. Cause you're right.
Well,
if there's only 15 of them, that causes different problems. I didn't think about that, but
this probably means that on the FFW Plus side, we're going to be embarking on an X-Men rewatch at some point, which is going to be
here we go
something.
There's fun parts about those movies. Okay.
Oh, there are some of those movies are fantastic, and some of them are just truly terrible.
Let's get into the Ms. Marvel finale after a quick word from these sponsors. You've been hearing us talk about it for a long time now. You need to check out epicheroshop.com. If you're looking for extra nerd merchandise, they are the company for you. Go to epicheroshop.com and use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save some money off your first order. And that can be a first order of Thor, God Butcher stuff, Asgard IPA, Strongest Avenger, all kinds of Thor-themed merch, but also some Ms. Marvel merch, Doctor Strange, etc. Check out epicheroshop.com and maybe not even just one time. You may want to go back and get more and more stuff so you're prepared to walk into these theaters and these Disney Plus viewings looking like a true fan. Check out epicheroshop.com. Friends From Work Plus is expanding. Friends From Work Plus is now the home for all of your bonus Friends From Work content, but it's not just through Patreon anymore. If you have a Patreon subscription to Friends From Work Plus, nothing will change. We love that. But we have now added the option to get those episodes directly through Apple subscriptions. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, then just check out Apple subscriptions. For $4.99 a month, you can get all of your bonus Friends From Work episodes directly at the touch of a button on your Apple Podcasts app. So again, if that interests you, if you want the ease of use of getting those directly to Apple, check out Friends From Work Plus on Apple subscriptions.
And if you do want the prints or you do want the other perks within Friends From Work Plus, you're not precluded from having those. Just reach out to us because we don't have the same sort of contact avenues through Apple that we do through Patreon, but we would be obviously happy to include you in all of those as well.
Totally. Any of the perks that are promised on the Patreon side, you have access to. But yes, like Robbie said, reach out to us at the FFW Podcast or the FFWpodcast.com and we can get those to you.
One thing, Kyle, that I love about having Friends From Work Plus on Apple now is that there is a free trial option.
True.
So you can try it out for 3 days for free. Listen to a lot of our bonus episodes. See if it's for you. If so, stick around.
And they're all on there.
They're all on there. Yeah. And if not, no worries.
So check out Friends From Work Plus and check out Friends From Work Plus on Apple subscriptions as well.
All right, man, let's now an hour into this episode get into what the episode's about, which is the
nitty gritty
of this.
You lied.
this Ms. Marvel finale. I'm just going to kind of rapid fire Kyle style here because we've talked about Kyle style. Wow, I like that. Some of the big picture stuff and some of the like headline stuff here. But man, this episode was just, I really thought excellent all the way through. I love from the very beginning, the wrong people line. When Agent Deaver is saying like, ah, you know, this is what happens when the wrong people get powers. And that guy's like, the wrong people. And she's like, oh, I mean like kids. And it's, I love that they're carrying that thread forward from the initial episodes of them sort of investigating the mosques and there being clearly this racial bias. And I love that there's sort of a link here between how damage control is interacting with the Muslim population in Jersey City and the way that like the British military interacted during the partition. Like, I feel like it's not necessarily made explicit, but I think that's the connective tissue that I'm wanting to have seen. By the way, another thing that I loved about this on a high level, online, we posted what would have been our kind of desired rewrites to those middle episodes of the series. And Kyle, I actually think that almost everything in this finale would have worked exactly the same way with those rewrites, which kind of makes me happy because I love the finale so much. But if you're curious, we don't have time to talk about that now, but go check that out on social media.
No, we were right. I think this was an unbelievable finale and it only got better because they finally went back to the roots of the show, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
My first two notes were damage control, non-lethal rounds. Interesting just to see damage control this aggressive. We didn't get an answer on if it was a Skrull because she was acting really weird, but now it kind of made it seem like she's just acting on her own willpower and that's it. And, you know, she's doing her own thing. But then also, family is back with two exclamation points. Like, the family stuff was back.
Yeah.
And like, I think her sitting her whole family down to tell them she was Nightlight was more of what I was envisioning the confrontation with her mother being, because I like that she pre-told them. Her brother was a fun part of this episode, I thought. Her sister-in-law was cool. And then mainly the standout to me was her relationship with her dad.
So yeah, it was so good. And that's, I wrote down that we I almost feel like I needed to walk back some of the reveal talk from last episode because so much of what I think I was wanting, we did get here. And somebody wrote in saying that the kind of subtle, proud smile from her mom in episode 5 was actually a really interesting choice and sort of clearly deliberate and unique. And I can see that, especially in conjunction with this. I think had we not gotten these scenes, but I don't know that I needed two moments like that in retrospect. You and I may disagree on that, though.
There's a lot of people that know she's Nightlight already now. Did you notice that? Like, how do all her classmates already know? She sits down her family. I thought that was like a big moment, but then other people know already? And she's not real interested in hiding her identity too much because she pulls up her mask a lot and just talks to people.
And it's also not the most effective mask in the world. It doesn't cover all that much of her face.
By the way, that gets me so excited. How funny was the baseball hat thing? It was like such a meta joke. Like, you guys can't go out like that. Get your disguise on. And they just give them two hats. Like, baseball. We're not guys. Right. We're just going to a baseball game. But that's how I feel with their mask a little bit. It's like, okay, we all know who you are.
And the halal haram thing of basically being like forbidden or permissible within the Muslim community, I thought was like a fun. I liked that they didn't camp out on that too much or make that too much of a thing. But I thought it was just the right amount.
Am I crazy to have gotten chills? No joke, like 10 times here. Like, how cool was it the first time? I have chills right now. The power reveal was dope with the reflection on the skyscraper. Like, instead of showing her do it, you just see the mirror image in the background. I mean, come on, that was cool.
You are a person that gets chills in movies way more than I do, but you're not crazy because I, all through this episode, like I wrote down moments when I got chills and there were several of them, which is not the norm for me. And also, like you, there were a couple moments towards the end where I was getting a little choked up because it's just like, you're totally Right.
Let's do that then. Let me just point out a couple chill moments then. Let's see if they line up. And then we'll do a couple heartfelt moments in a second. And that's kind of how we can go through it. Because the image of her in the skyscraper was one. I thought the suit reveal was both of those things. Like her mom making the suit, I have chills right now, is a great tie into that entire family story.
I loved that whole scene.
Yeah. And it was so cool. Like, it looks cool. Like, this is a good first iteration, right?
Mm-hmm. Dude, I think the Phase 4 costume design has been pretty excellent.
Shout out Andy.
Yeah. All the way back to WandaVision. I think it's just been pretty great. There are maybe some here and there that people would have issues with, but by and large, A+.
But that was a pretty good choked up moment, too, between her and her mother, and her mother accepting her that way.
Yeah.
The song they used during the school chase thing was so cool. Chills on like the like rap song.
Well, and by the way, this is maybe not a chills moment, but one that I loved in this episode and I want to highlight in all of them. One thing that's been so consistent through this entire show is how great the like title cards and Marvel Studios logo entries have been, where it's like, I think that, well, we didn't talk about that in episode 5, but that was one of the things I thought was really great about episode 5 is the like black and white kind of vintage, it's sort of like WandaVision. But then here, this one, like, I loved the track behind it. I loved the placement of it. Like, those have been really great moments, and that's largely due to Laura Cartman, who I think has just, like we said, done incredible, incredible work here.
Chills with her powers, like the Umbigan thing. I thought it was a cool shout out.
Yeah.
And also I thought it was handled perfectly where, hear me out on this, it's chills because it does look awkward. It's cool and awkward at the same time. Like, it was kind of goofy. And that was kind of the point. I'm excited.
They were really able to effectively channel the movement of comics, Kamala, where it's like, obviously the powers are different, but it's still that kind of gangly thing that people were worried would be lost here. Like what you're saying, the awkwardness. I think the awkwardness of the way her powers manifest, even with her like hopping from like stone to stone almost when she's making these little steps. But also like, yeah, when she embiggens, but even whenever she's kind of like just... it's a little bit of the like stretchy swinging around thing that you get glimpses of, even though that's not technically the power set. And I thought that was really impressive. And that's why I think the visual effects team here deserves a shout out, not just for looking good in terms of it not like pulling you out, but I think just on the creative side, I think that they were kind of tasked with one of the more difficult jobs here. And I think that to pull that off as well as they did was pretty impressive.
And this was just another reminder to me of why the veil stuff was so stupid in the first place. Because this showdown felt like it had the appropriate level of stakes. Now that all that stuff's out of the way, I kind of liked the Home Alone feel and the planning on the whiteboard. Because, you know, they're not killers. They're not trying to stop damage control. And honestly, damage control is likely not trying to kill them anyways. It's not like a showdown of life and death. And the veil thing just took it to a place it didn't need to go with the life and death stuff and the whole universe will be destroyed and like the goofiness of the clandestines and all that. And so again, we were right last week in that clearing that runway was so refreshing. And I found this, again, the scale up of the stakes to be very appropriate here. Back to the first two episodes.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. And I think that, it's like we said, go look at what we posted online. Like, I think Damage Control was always the right villain here because of like the link with the, because like we said, I think that the partition stuff is so important to Kamala's character, to the show, like, And linking the relationship that her family had with the British military to the relationship that her family and she specifically is now having with Damage Control, I think makes so much sense that it's just the perfect villain in that way, like thematically, but I think it's also the perfect villain stakes-wise, like you're saying. And one of the things that I love so much that you brought up early on is the ramifications that we're getting from No Way Home or for Far From Home, really, of them having access to all the Stark tech and how that immediately, I mean, if you think back to the MCU, there were never really points where there was like a government agency that could keep up with the Avengers or anybody that was powered on that level. But Tony always could. Like, Tony could always kind of come up with things, like you referenced Civil War, like different ways that he could combat even really powerful people like Wanda. And I think that's just such a great creative way to now make, raise the stakes in general, like make some of these even really powerful people subject to like this government agency or government control potentially. And I think that could really open up a lot of possibilities when we're then looking at what the Thunderbolts team could look like. And when we've talked about a Dark Reign sort of a thing, like there's so much there and it feels so rooted in the overarching MCU narrative, like because we're seeing some of the same tech just like more clearly weaponized. But isn't that so much better than this agency just all of a sudden out of nowhere having these crazy technical capabilities and being able to take down superheroes? Like the link to the Stark stuff, which is something I never thought of in No Way Home at the moment, has become like something that I am now really, really loving.
Yeah. And then two of the more moving points for me in this entire series. One, oh my goodness, the description of her name with Miss Marvel and her dad. I have chills right now. That mm-hmm. was legitimately emotional and so cool. That mm-hmm. is really cool. Now, I don't know, is that a fact? Does Kamala actually really mean that? Does it mean a wonder, a marvel? I don't know that, but if it does, that's the coolest thing ever. And the fact that it came from her dad on the roof, I don't know, everything about that was so appropriate to me. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And the fact that her reaction was, I'm named after Carol freaking Danvers, was so funny to me and so good. Like, it was all literally perfect, that scene.
Yeah, I mean, I think we probably had the same
I got so
moments.
Teared up.
Yeah, I mean, that whole last scene, but also the scene you already referenced with her mom. I just got all of the family stuff that I had loved so much in those early episodes. And like we said, there were some good moments there in episodes 3 through 5 as well. But this was just such a return to form on that front too.
So, you are now the great new superhero called. Called what?
I'm still figuring it out.
Of course you are. Hey, we're all still figuring it out. But you save people, Kamala.
Heaviest thing I ever picked up, right? And I saw the damage control agents all around me, so I just spun around and then I shot them all over the
you
face.
You saved lives.
Falcons aren't even safe. We need to fix that too. Are you writing that down? I hope you're ready.
And if you saved one life, well, you saved the world. Do you know why we named you Kamala? Your mother and I tried for years to have a second child. We'd almost lost all hope. And then you came. Oh, Peter. You were just so perfect. That's what Kamal means in Arabic. Perfect. But in Urdu, it's more like, what's the word? Wonder. Marvel. Kamal means marvel.
I share the same name as Carol freaking Danvers.
I don't know who that is. But you sure are, and always have been, our own little Miss Marvel.
Man, everything changes when you become a parent. I'm not trying to be that guy that always says that, but moments that would not have worked as well, all of a sudden are like, what in the world? And just, yeah, dad talking to his daughter there. Oh, that she's a marvel and a wonder is just, it's unbelievable. So that choked me up. The mom stuff choked me up. And I even low-key kind of thought that even though it's a little campy and a little cheesy, some of the fun, like, the people from the city showing up thing was kind of cool. Actually, like, very Spider-Man 2-esque. Maybe a little campy, but kind of cool to me.
It was Spider-Man / Spider-Man 2 / The Avengers. Like, because, you know, like, the first Avengers film ends, you've got the promise playing in the background, and then you've got all these clips of people being interviewed talking about the Avengers. It reminded me a ton of that. But also, yeah, I mean, that was maybe even something of a callback to Raimi. There was actually another Spider-Man 2 reference, I thought, and probably not intentionally, but one that immediately made me think of that movie. Whenever the car is flying towards the crowd, and then the music stops for a second, and you realize that Kamala has caught it, that is like beat for beat the scene from Spider-Man 2 whenever he is like stopping the getaway car, and then you see that it goes quiet and you see that it's caught by the web, and it's like I love that as somebody that loves that movie more than most people.
I love that moment, but didn't know it was from Spider-Man 2. I didn't catch that reference as much, but I did love it.
It may or may not be, but gosh, it was very similar. There are a couple other kind of chills moments that I was just going to rattle off because I know we moved into heartfelt ones, which
I'm all over the place today.
I love it. I only have a few. Yeah, the moment when she jumps in front of Kamran and has the shield up was so dope, I thought. Like, that's one where I legitimately got chills. It's like what you've always talked about, these kind of full power moments.
I loved her being the non-violent person here, right? Because she also disagrees with Kamran, and Kamran's hitting her, but she's protecting Kamran, and she's protecting the people, and she's protecting her friends. It's all just a defense thing always, you know?
Man,
it's very little offensive stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and in fairness, I guess the one thing that would have not worked as well here with our friends from Rook Rewrites is how central Kamran was to Damage Control kind of closing in because they were going after him. I think there are workarounds there. And I do kind of like that Kamala was not the one being hunted as much as the one protecting the one being hunted. Like, I like that's the role that she's in. Now, that said, I think you could also do that in a really interesting way by maybe having them go after the folks from her mosque. Like, because we already saw that they were basically lumping everybody in her community together with Nightlight. So I think that there's another sort of creative way they could have done that without ever having to go into clandestine stuff. But I just wanted to raise that because I did really like, in the context of this episode, like, we criticized the last one so much for how the clandestine stuff was just all over the place in terms of, like, oh, they're good, they're funny, they're terrible, they're going to kill you, and they're going to laugh while they do it. Like, and then at the very end, she's like, has this turn that we couldn't even figure out if it was a turn or not, Kamran's mom. And contrasted to that, I really did appreciate where they went with that character here. Like, I like that he doesn't just turn fully evil, but that he does kind of, he gets frustrated and angry and does try to hurt these people, but not in such a way where it's irredeemable, where he goes, like, he doesn't go down a path that we can't follow. I do like that line, though, where he's talking, not that line, but I do line from the show where he says that, like, explicitly. He's like, how can I go back from this? Like, look what I've done. And that's a really great moment, like, character moment for Kamala. And so I think that all was handled well, in my opinion.
Why is he being torn from the inside out? We got an answer that his mother in episode 5 did turn to help Kamran. That's apparently what Kamala says. So
yeah,
as poorly executed as that was the answer. But then why is he being, like, tortured? Is it just that the power is, like, overwhelming or it's new to him? Like, will that subside without being healed?
Yeah, I guess so. I think in some of our Comics Corner episodes, finishing up Miss Marvel, we'll just read sort of a smattering of issues on Red Dagger and on Kamran and kind of get into what they could be doing here. But I think it's that's such a weakness of the show, not just because we didn't like the clandestine stuff, but it was just so poorly explained. Like, I still don't really understand who, like, what Kamran is. Like, I don't, like, he's their son, but he, everybody else, all the rest of them were, like, super old, right? But he is actually a teenager, they say. And we do see him fight here, even, like, without his power. So he's clearly been trained in some capacity, but not, like, I just don't know how we're, like, what's the connection between him and Kamala? Like, are they similar, like, genetically?
And then they almost kissed? So, like, yeah, they're still kind of into each other?
Right. And then, I mean, I just, that's, it's such a bummer to me because, again, if you take all that stuff out, all this makes way more sense. Like, oh, Kamala is a mutant. And then with the bangle, it sort of creates this whole new thing. But, like, okay, but there's also the gen stuff in there. So is she like three things? Like, is she a human and mutant and also has this, like, gen connection? Or is that part of the... Am I crazy?
And are the Jin connected to the Kree somehow? Is that going to be a fourth thing?
Because
she swapped places with Captain Marvel. So there's something there, too.
Yeah. It feels like there were two writers' teams writing two different shows without realizing it. And then at the end, they were like, oh, gosh. Well, we have three of these episodes and three of these episodes. So let's just make them into a six-episode series. I mean, and I'm joking, but I'm... kind of not.
Yeah, that's going to make it really hard to rank when we get there because it does feel so separated. But this was separated in a good way, which is why I was super stoked on this in general.
Exactly.
But back to your Kamran and Miss Marvel thing, like when she's using her powers to protect him from the bullets, that just got me thinking while you were doing that Robbie rant. Is there almost kind of two kinds of heroes? There's a category of people that absolutely don't want to kill. Protecting is 100% their nature, and saving lives at all costs is one category. You know, that's like Cap,
Spider-Man,
Miss Marvel. Who else would be in that? I'm trying to think about this for a second. Where, you know what I'm talking about. That's their nature.
Yeah. No, I think, well, and that's one of the reasons I liked the way that Spider-Man was characterized in the MCU even early on, like in Infinity War. Sure. Because to your point, I actually don't think that that's a very large category, but I think it's increasing in size, which is nice. But I think that one of the kind of strange things about the MCU is the heroes for a while were almost like paramilitary for the first three phases, you know?
Bruce would almost be in that category, you know, sans the hulking out.
Sam's in that category,
that he couldn't
control.
Sam, yeah, exactly. There you go. Sam's the other one. Because then I'm thinking the other category is like they want to do what's best and they want to protect people, but it can often be in like an offensive attack as the way to protect. Tony, Thor.
Yeah. Black Widow. Clint, I would say. At least early Clint.
Right. Where does Vision fall on that? Vision's kind of... Because Vision's probably more on the Cap side as far as, like, not going to take life.
Yeah.
See, this is a whole different episode. But anyways, I like that Miss Marvel is, like, falling clearly into one category, and that would be interesting to talk about, you know, these motivations. Anyways, wow.
I should be kinder to Clint there because Clint did choose to save Natasha rather than bring her in, so that's not fair of me.
Right, but he was a spy. Like, we saw him on the Budapest mission in Black Widow, the film. Like, he was doing things offensively to protect people, but, like, trying to take out people, you know?
Yeah, I think that is an interesting discussion because I think what we're talking about is sort of the difference between, like a hero and, like, a warrior almost, where it's like, are you out trying to save people or are you out trying to fight evil?
Well, you're so smart. Save or fight evil. Both are good. Because that's what I was going to say is like, I'm not trying to paint that
and
one category as good and when one's bad. Because, like, for example, an argument can be made that if Cap had a different personality, things could have gone differently, right? Like the don't trade lives thing, they could have destroyed the stone right then and there if Cap didn't have that motto. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was times where you need the warrior.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
Anyways, wow. I'm so excited today.
I do think.
Let's go back to the show. What else do you have for Ms. Marvel?
With so many ideas. I think we've covered the bulk of my stuff. I just had a few lines that I really liked, some that are funny and some that I thought were just kind of heartfelt or heartwarming. One line that I really loved in that reveal scene to her family, the reveal that's not actually a reveal, is when they're talking about her dad basically giving it away. And they're like, well, he only has conversations on speakerphone. And he's like, I mean, just speaker's so convenient.
I laughed a couple times in this episode. That was one.
Yeah, I thought a lot of the interactions, and I'm trying to remember specific ones, but in the school, like the whole blackboard scene I thought was incredible and such a great callback to episode one. So I don't want to miss that. Like the sequence of her kind of animating and visualizing the plan and then it actually happening kind of in real time was great. Also, I thought all that looked great, like you were saying, but it was just the right amount of funny without being too goofy that I was pulled out of it. Like, it's still, okay, this is the thing. This is what I wish the Hawkeye finale had felt like, Kyle, where it's like, it's similar kind of stakes and still fun, like they're throwing softballs or shooting softballs at these guys, but there's no like animated owl.
Okay.
Which I don't even hate the animated owl so much, but you know what I mean by that.
You hate that owl. You want to kill the owl. It's an endangered
body
species.
Body bagging that owl.
Wow. The other major difference is that like in Home Alone, it's funny because they make the villains super, super goofy. I appreciated that while Ms. Marvel and her team were doing very young high school goofy like things like throwing softballs and building a chemical. Right. I don't think they made Damage Control look stupid. That's a big difference.
That's so true.
Like they still
that's
were like
really smart. That's
they were
a good,
still
that's
like
a good
moving
call.
In like an effective way, and they were still hitting them a couple times with their tech, and like they weren't totally overwhelmed by it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like they do wind up basically capturing everybody except for Kamran and Kamala. And
right. So that did never make it like feel like, stupid.
Yeah, there aren't all these moments of them like tripping on marbles and stuff. Like it's a very like they're highly trained agents, which is what
there was
I
no
want.
Like,
what,
whoa, 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 whoa,
right
kind of moment.
Yeah, I thought even the scene with the what they think is a bomb that winds up being like the speaker, I thought was really well executed. Like there's not this like it's not like that's one thing where like the way that they were written and directed. Yeah, it could have been a source of camp that I would not like as much.
Okay, here's where it would have been bad. They walk in, they see the bomb, they go, oh gosh, it's a bomb, get out. And they all actually bail and go like, oh, it's a bomb. And that's the end of the
right.
scene.
Or they like huddle in the corner like they're like super scared.
Yeah, like, or like, what do we do now? There's a bomb there. I like that they like, as they're backing up, the music starts and they just turn and shoot it. Like, okay, this is not it. That's a key difference. I think.
Yeah, no, that's exactly. And I love that like there were even moments where I'm like, they shouldn't have had the music come on because they would have actually thought it was a bomb and it would have been a longer delay. But I love that because they're kids. Like, you know, they're it just feels right. And that's why, like in the Hawkeye finale, it's not that you can't be goofy or that we're like everything has to be super serious. I think it's just making those right calls where it's like it serves Kamala more if she's facing a legitimate threat. Like it elevates her. It makes her look like more of an actual hero than if she's just kind of dealing with these like super goofy kind of foolish villains, which is what we got even to some degree with Kingpin, which we won't go into here, but that's what I mean there. If people have wondered why we kind of take issue with that. So, so well done here. And I think the exact right tone. That was a tangent. The other lines that I just wanted to briefly highlight are not as funny or as fun, but I thought just really great lines. I also love the moment whenever they're sneaking Kamran out of the mosque and it's Sheikh, the imam there, says, just remember that just because someone treats you as their enemy doesn't give you the right to treat them as yours. What a great line, specifically for this show, like given the background of all of it, you know?
What a great line. I love it coming from him. I liked him as a character throughout. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't write them down, but there was a bunch of lines like that from him and her father, her mother. There was a lot of good moments.
Save a life, save the world was another great one.
Yep. I like Kamala saying there is no normal.
Yeah, which is another great callback to the G. Willow Wilson comics. Yeah, there were so many little moments like that I'm sure we're missing. And there was one more funny one that I almost forgot, that my last line call out. In that scene you were talking about, the montage from that montage at the end. One, I love that we get the return of the Illuminantes here in this episode. And
yes,
you know, more on that later. Stay tuned. But the line, well, it's going to be very difficult for her to find a husband, that actually made me laugh.
I really enjoyed the integration of the social media throughout.
Yeah, yeah.
Like TikToks at the end, TikToks at the beginning. That's how people are filming her. Like, that feels very current, but also appropriate for that age. Love that.
Another funny, funny moment there with Zoe saying that she's there because she does all of her TikToks in the theater room because of the lighting.
Yep.
The other line that got me, though, was the boy from episode 2 when he's, like, so pumped.
Yeah.
And he's like,
yeah,
but, you know, like, where were those powers when she dropped me and I broke my leg? Like, I guess that was, like, the beta test.
Yeah, that was good. No doubt.
And I'm sure there's stuff that we're missing, but we said last week, if you listened to our episode last week, Kyle said that there are, you know, kind of two types of episodes that are really fun and one that isn't fun. That it's fun whenever something's so bad that it's fun to laugh at, a la Spider-Man 3, or they're fun because something's so good that we're just amped to talk about it. And this is for sure in that category, and this has been such a fun episode to just be able to rave about the show again.
Yeah. I feel rejuvenated today, which is really fun. This was a let's freaking go minus for me. Oh, Kyle, how could it be a minus? Okay, first of all, everyone back up. That's an A-, which is an incredible score. Everyone would be excited about. The only minuses, and this is so minor, oh my gosh, but one, I don't love any of the real tie to the clandestines. So even like Kamran exploding with his new power, saying he's being torn up, I was like, I don't get why this is happening. I don't get where this is coming from, a little bit. It's so minor. Again, let's freaking go, minus. The only other minus is I thought the split second CGI of her like coming off the roof running down looked a little weird, like it looked a little sped up. It's so minor.
Okay.
So let's freaking go minus. Overall, I feel like this redeemed a large part of the series. This is going to be a really hard show to rank because a couple episodes were lower than I've ever given. And then a couple were higher than I've given. So yeah, overall, I really am feeling fired up today. I'm thankful that this kind of reinvigorated life into this. I feel like this now is going to turn the spotlight back to Marvel again. If it had even left for 2 days, it's kind of back now on, I'm sure people already are going to be talking, running rampant about this mutant discussion, what that could lead. So I'm kind of excited about that. Like, it feels like a moment today. Mm-hmm. And I just had a lot of fun in the end. And I'm really excited to see what happens with Kamala.
So your minus is like, I receive those. I see that. This is a straight let's freaking go for me. I really had a great time watching this one. I laughed out loud several times. I got chills several times. I got emotional. It's kind of everything that I could ask for. And just in terms of like my quality antenna of something just being off, that never really happened. I see what you mean. You know, I've been very vocal about how I feel about the clandestine stuff, and that did show up a time or two here, but there was so much more of what I loved, and even the way that they did that was more in the vein of what I loved about the show that couldn't dampen my excitement here. Like, I, in my mind, episode 1, 2, and 3 are right up on the same tier. Again, I totally understand why people might disagree, but
I love it. It was a tiny, tiny thing. It's okay.
Kyle, I get that you hated it. Ms. Marvel's your least favorite superhero.
Hey, between the two of us, which one of us remembered that her nickname was Sloth Baby?
That was you. That was you.
Yeah, exactly. So don't question my Miss Marvel fandom.
That said, one of my favorite things about having this grading system is hearing other folks, friends from work grades. So as always, hit us up with your grade. You can either email us, like we said before, or find us on social media or the Slack. But was this a let's freaking go for y'all, or a let's go, or a that's fair, or heaven forbid, missed opportunity? Hope not. But if so, speak your truth.
All opinions are welcome, but this is not a missed opportunity. So that opinion will be deleted. This is really important, for real. I want people to be on the same page here. We're taking a week off next week just so that everyone can catch up. Go see Thor. Go watch all the Ms. Marvels if you haven't seen them. Then listen to the podcast episodes, because we think those will add to those experiences. But then we need to reflect on Thor. We haven't given it a ranking. We have not talked bigger picture, and I've seen it twice now. I know you've probably seen it two or three times. So we have...
just twice, surprisingly.
Okay. We have a different perspective on it a little bit, and we've heard from you guys. So that's a fun episode to come back to and kind of rank and reflect and all that. But then I want to do the same thing for Ms. Marvel. So that'll probably be a week or two after that. Once we have a chance to maybe rewatch it, get some space from this. And then She-Hulk is coming up. Before She-Hulk comes out, Robbie, I do think we should do some episodes about all this big picture stuff. How is Carol tied in?
Yeah.
Where do we think that's going? Where is Thor going? Where is Disney Plus sitting as a whole to you? How does that compare to the other content? Is it oversaturated? Is it not? There's a whole lot of other episodes we can get into. And so, like I said, 1 week off, and then I'm excited for this 5 week period where we can spend a lot of time reflecting. Thank you so much, everyone who has been a part of this journey with us. Robbie and I are always grateful when we come to the end of something, in this case, the end of Thor and Ms. Marvel. What a mega week it has been. Thank you for joining us on this journey. Thank you for listening. Thanks for subscribing and following and telling your friends about it. Higher, further, faster, baby. We are moving upward and onward, and we're excited to have you guys along for the journey. So thanks again. We love you all. And we'll see you next time on Friends from Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.